tonight. Welcome to our Saturday morning call. David and Michael are here on the island, and Anna's in New York, and Damodas is in Chicago. Ross, where are you? Amen. Where are you?
I'm in California.
Okay. And Ross, how about you? He's gone. I suppose he'll be back. All right. So, I will start this off today talking. Oh, he's back.
Hey, sorry guys. I'm having troubles with Skype. I'm down here in Melbourne, Australia.
Melbourne, Australia. All right. Okay. So, we also have someone named Navid has just joined, and Ivan has joined. So today we're going to start talking and about loneliness and the conceit of loneliness. And also someone just mentioned about wanting to not want. There is a catchphrase that's been old and tried and used and actually is quite humorous. It's called desiring desirelessness. Has anybody ever heard of that term, desiring desirelessness? It's just another habit, because we've heard something good about desirelessness, so we want that too. We've heard something good about having companionship, and so we're lonely, and we want that too. And we've seen all of this competition on the internet and in sports and music and all kinds of places, and we think that the people who win feel good, so we want to compete and win and feel good. It's all about wanting stuff. And there is a kind of wise wanting where you get what you want easily. That's the way to start living our lives, is to want what we can have easily. Because if you want something that you don't have, you're dissatisfied. You're automatically dissatisfied if you're wanting something that you don't have. This is such a simple point, and yet people will say, going back to that phrase of desiring desirelessness, or wanting to not want stuff, that's so easy to see that that's dukkha. Wanting something that you don't have and you want to not have wanting, to where in fact you're full of wanting. So how do we handle that? There's a very simple way of doing it. In fact, the place to start is when you want to not want anything, when you're desiring desirelessness, can you see that you're desiring desirelessness and say, wait a minute, I still have desire and I'm okay. The only time that I'm not okay is when I'm in that moment actually desiring something. And right now I'm desiring to not have any desires. Well, that's just a thought. That's just a thought. The thought comes up, oh, it's better not to desire stuff. And yet in the past I have desired and I'll probably desire into the future. Therefore, I want desirelessness. And we then create yet a new desire. So if we can see that we're creating a new desire based upon some old guru someplace saying that you shouldn't want stuff, then that's a handle that you can get started on, so that every time that you catch yourself wanting something, you can say, aha, I see that. Now, most meditators can't do that. In fact, this is actually a teaching of the Buddha. It comes out of the time when he was in Bodh Gaya, right after he fell into the creek. You see, he had gotten himself so emaciated that he was weak. And the reason that he wanted it was because he was actually desiring desirelessness. And so he ate very little. He flagellated himself. He caused all kinds of health problems. And when he recognized that he had made himself sick, desiring desirelessness, he decided that he had to make a change. And then he recognized that I need to get the strength back. I need to eat. And so he got some boiled rice with milk from a cowherd's daughter and started getting a little belly on him. And when his friends saw that, they abandoned him because they thought that he was the best desiring desirelessness dude in town. Well, he probably was. He was actually quite good at self-flagellation. But after he sat down in Bodh Gaya, he figured out, Patichasamuppada, he actually figured out how the mind works. He also figured out that he had been depriving himself of the pleasures of the first jhana, and the pleasures of the first jhana actually is just being comfortable, satisfied, and happy without having anything. And he asked, why am I afraid of this pleasure of just being happy and satisfied? And then he reflected upon the time when he was in probably a teenager, sitting under the rose apple tree. This is one of the most famous points, because in that one paragraph, he states that it is the first jhana that is, in fact, the path to awakening. And what is that point? Is just being satisfied in the moment. Just being okay with the way things are. This is really all there is to it. I mean, look how many of these conversations we've had. We've had one on Sunday and one on a Friday evening or Saturday morning, one on Sunday afternoon, week after week after week for several years. We've got a couple of hundred of these videos out. And yet the Dhamma is actually very simple. Stop wanting stuff that you don't have. But we have to remember to stop wanting stuff that we don't have. And one of the things that we often don't have is like peace of mind. Well, stop wanting peace of mind. And if you stop wanting peace of mind and just settle down, you'll have the peace of mind. But if you want it, then you're in a state of desiring. So this is a very, very simple point, but we have to keep looking, because the beginner is not skilled at seeing their own disappointments. They're not skilled at seeing their own dissatisfaction. For instance, when someone is desiring something and then they say, oh, I shouldn't desire it. Oh, I should desire not desiring. Then they're back into the dukkha again. Also, we become critical of ourselves because of that. Oh, you should not want stuff. Well, that criticism actually keeps us from being in that state of satisfaction. And so what we can do is to begin to see that we're critical of ourselves and start being a friend of yourself. You're your own best friend. And that leads us into the topic about loneliness, because loneliness is just another form of wanting something that you don't have. And that is companionship. And yet the best companion that you'll ever have is your own mind. The best companion you'll ever have is your own feeling good, your own sense of joy, that's the best companion you'll ever have. And yet, we are critical of that and then wanting someone else to solve my problems for me. Well, nobody's going to solve your problems. You created them in your own mind. They're kept there locked up in your own mind. You beat yourself up with those thoughts, and nobody's going to be able to help you other than occasionally somebody can point it out that look what you're doing to yourself. But just because they point it out, that just means that this is a moment of mindfulness for you to look at what you're actually doing. And so desiring to be out of the loneliness, you can say, look at that. I'm lonely because I could be satisfied instead. But here I am wanting something that I don't have. And a lot of people, by the way, in this world are lonely. There is a song from years ago. I don't know if any of you remember it. It starts off something like this. Lonely, I'm Mr. Lonely. I ain't got nobody to call my own. Okay, so this is the standard kind of music that we play to ourselves. We don't have anybody. To where, in fact, if you had somebody, she's probably going to give you a hard time anyway. So you're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't. That, in fact, this is something that's quite typical, and that is that if we want something, like a friend or a mate or a drink of a beverage that's not available or whatever it is, we feel bad because we don't have it. And so we strive and feel bad getting it. And then when we get it, we have to keep it. And when we keep it, we're dukkha, we're suffering. And then eventually we'll lose it. And then we're suffering again. So there's only dukkha at the end of it. At one time, I thought that pleasure was a good feeling and that confusion and not liking were the dukkha. But now I've come to find out that liking and not liking are actually the same thing. And that when we want something, if we want it unwisely, there's nothing for us with it but dukkha, just like putting up with something that we don't want. Well, if we're lonely and we want companionship, that actually means that I don't like this being alone. Isn't that the same thing? Wanting someone to be your companion is exactly the same thing as I'm not good enough alone. And yet you are good enough alone. And if you would have those kind of thoughts, oh, I'm good enough. Yeah, if somebody comes and wants me, then that's okay. I can handle that. But if I go out searching for somebody, being a Mr. Lonely, whoever it is out there, they don't want a Mr. Lonely. They don't want somebody they've got to take care of. They want somebody to take care of them. So if you can get into the position to where you can take care of yourself, then naturally you're going to be attractive to others. But if you are, in fact, out there Mr. Lonely, then nobody wants to be around you. We are creating our own misery. And so this is a major point about loneliness is wanting something that we don't have when in fact everything that you need is already there. It's just a matter of the thoughts that you're having. So can you see those thoughts? Can you see the thought of lonely? Can you see the thought of I want something? And when you can see the thought that I want something, then you can say what the Buddha said. Aha, I see that. that this is a phrase that you can start using over and over and over again, I invite you to start looking and seeing it in that tone of voice of, aha, I see it. Aha, I can see that. If you can say that, if you can say that about your loneliness, can you say that about your loneliness? Aha, I see that loneliness. If you can see it like this, guess what? In that moment of saying, aha, I see the loneliness, in that moment, you're not lonely. In that moment, you're actually pretty proud of yourself for being able to see the loneliness. And then the next mind moment, you're back into the loneliness again. And so the next mind moment after that would be, aha, I see you. I see you, loneliness. And so we continue to use that often. Now, here's the point. If you had loneliness and then no more loneliness and another loneliness and another loneliness, lonely moments, one after another, then you're going to be in pretty bad shape. But if you can have a moment of loneliness followed by, aha, I see that loneliness, followed by another moment of loneliness, followed by another, aha, I see that, then you're only half as lonely as you used to be. You're already making great progress, if you want to think about it in the sense of progress. Actually, what you're seeing is that when you have that thought of, aha, I see that, you're out of the dukkha right then. And then you go back into it. So come out of it and come out of it happily. Because the other option would be, I'm lonely, I have another thought of loneliness, and now I see that I'm lonely, oh, poor me, and I go even deeper into the loneliness. And then we start to criticize ourselves, oh, you should not be lonely. And now we've gotten ourselves into desiring desirelessness, which is a pretty funky state to be in. Wanting something that we don't have. Can we, in fact, when we want to get rid of our loneliness, can we see that too and say, aha, I see that now I've got two issues. One, I'm lonely, and two, I don't want to be lonely. I should not be lonely. In fact, that's the third one. I should not be, I don't want to be, and I am lonely. And if we can see those one after another, we can interject that, aha, I see you, Myra. Aha, I see that loneliness. Aha, I see that desire to be not lonely. And aha, I see that rule or that should, I should not be lonely. Hello, David. So, this is the way that we can handle it, is by mindfulness. And then, and by the way, the word mindfulness is the catchword in English. It's gotten really, really popular in the sense that mindfulness was the translation for sati. And sati has to do with remembering. And that in Tibet, they didn't have a clue about mindfulness. They had their own language for it. And that Zen was the same. They've got their style, but sati, or with Anapanasati, was very much a Theravadan thing. And yet, Michael and I have been going through a lot of websites and places looking up data for our website. And I find that every time Dick and Buddhist Harry is using the word mindfulness now without really understanding what it actually means. Going back to, you got to remember to look. And whatever mindfulness is sort of like continuing to remember. And that's not the way things are. Things are going to be up and down. And the Buddha teaches anicca vata sankhara upatta vaya dhammino. Everything is changing. Can you see that change? Can you see the change that goes from I'm lonely to I'm more lonely to I don't like being lonely to oh, I should not be lonely? Can you see that sequence in the mind? If you can see that, can you also begin to put some real sati in there and to see, aha, I see you. Aha, I see you. And that's the way that we're talking about sati, that mindfulness that sees, the mindfulness that can understand because we're actually looking, to remember to look. Because if we can remember to look, we can change. And what is that initial change? Aha, I see you. Wow, I'm so happy that I can see you. Wow, I would rather be able to see my loneliness and make a joke about it rather than get stuck in it and desiring to get out of it and not being able to get out of it, desiring desirelessness, wanting to get free from something when all we have to do is make that major change, take the right effort to say, aha, I can see that stuff. Because if I can see it with that tone of voice, I've already made a change. Wow, what a relief it is. I can see my loneliness. Don't have to desire to get out of it. I don't have to be in a should or a would or a could get out of it. It's, aha, I can see it. And if we can do that every time that we see it, we can come out of it every time. Now, if people get stuck into loneliness, actually what that means is that they also have thoughts of, I'm not good enough on my own. I need help. This is actually the first level of doubt. Who's going to get me out of my suffering? Aha! A girl! I want a girl. I want a girl. I want a girl. Or in the girl's case, aha, I am lonely. I can't get out of my loneliness by myself. I want a man. I want a boy to get me out of it. Well, guess what? Any boy that the girl finds is probably also lonely. He's stuck in the same mess that she is. You put the two of them together, and you've got double dukkha. Everybody thinks that having a relationship is going to solve my problems, and in fact, what you're doing is you're keeping your own problem, and now you're dealing with somebody else's problem because she wants you to fix her, and you want her to fix you. What a mess. But this is the way that we've been taught in our society. But if you recognize it like this, that if you can come out of your own loneliness, if you can be happy, comfortable, and satisfied in your own life, then you will attract those people who figure out that maybe this guy really can get me out of my loneliness. He's already happy. Maybe he can cheer me up. But instead, we've got the wrong idea about it. Oh, he's got muscle. A muscle-bound man can take me away from my misery. Or a handsome man. He looks nice. If I look at him, I feel pleasant. Until he opens his mouth and tells me how unhappy and miserable he is. In fact, he was working really hard to be handsome so that he could find a girl who was working really hard to be beautiful so that they could both get each other to fix their problems. And nobody's going to fix your problem. You're going to have to do that all on your own. And how do we do that? Coming back to that point, aha, I see that stuff. Aha, I do not have to feel lonely. Just when a lonely thought comes, I can have that thought of, I'm going to have to solve this myself, and I've got the tools to do it. So, these are actually the three levels of doubt. The first level of doubt is, who in the world am I going to get to fix me? I'm looking for a mate. I'm looking for a therapist. I'm looking for a guru. I'm looking for a Jesus, a plastic Jesus for the dashboard of my truck. I'm looking for someone else to fix me. And there's an awful lot of charlatans and religious people out there who are quite willing to take your money and leave you with nothing. But at least you paid hoping that they would fix you. And nobody's going to fix you. You're going to have to do that yourself, and you need to do it every time you remember to do it. And come back to that, aha, I can fix myself. Aha, I can see that stuff and make a change. If we can do that over and over again, fairly soon we gain the confidence that I actually can solve my own problems. So that's the second level of doubt. Once we come out of the doubt and ain't nobody going to fix us but ourselves, now we come to the second level of doubt, am I up to the task? Well, the way that we practice, the way that we practice over and over and over again is by doing something very small, very easy to do. That aha, I see you is actually a gladdening of the mind. It's brightening the mind. And if we can do that over and over and over again, aha, I see that problem. Aha, I can fix that problem. That in fact, the Buddha in Sutta number 48 makes a very striking statement. He says that the first level of knowledge, the first real knowledge, is when someone gains the attitude that no matter how obstructed the mind gets with loneliness or with desiring, desirelessness, whatever it is that we've got in our mind, we can, in fact, stop that stuff, clean it out, and come back to the reality of the moment that you're okay, you're fine, you got no troubles. All the troubles that you manufactured were inside of your own mind. You obstructed your own mind. And this knowledge is that we can deconstruct that. We can take it apart. We can, in fact, come back to reality. And we do that over and over and over again. This is real confidence. The confidence that you can come out of your own loneliness. The confidence that you can come out of your desire. Rather than just being stuck in desire and desiring desirelessness, now you have the attitude, I know that I can stop my desire. I know I see it here, but when I saw it, I came out of it. This knowledge, the Buddha says, is in fact the first step upon the path. In fact, what the Buddha is saying is that this is the first step of Sotapan. The first step of Sotapan is that confidence that I can clean out my mind. That's a major point. A lot of people think that the Sotapan state is by having some sort of super duper experience. Oh, I saw stars. Oh, I saw a beautiful angel. Oh, I saw the golden streets of paradise. Whatever like that. We think that it's an experience to where it's not. It's really the basis of confidence. This is the first step on the path. And this is actually a noble state. It's also supramundane. This is an important point, is that it is out of the ordinary world. Everybody in the world is lonely. They desire desirelessness. They don't like who they are. They compete with each other. And this is new. This is something that very few people have, that confidence that I, in fact, can come out of my state of desire. I can come out of my misery. I can come out of my loneliness. I can do that. Hot dog, I can do it. That's the state of Sotapan in the beginning. Now, there are several stages of Sotapan. In fact, in this sutta that I'm mentioning, there are seven levels of it. And this first one is confidence. We have the confidence that we can come out of it. All right. And by practicing that over and over again, we can come to a state of being settled. Wow, I've got it made. That confidence is building. And along with that also is the confidence that I know the path. I've got the tools that I need to do it. I've got the Eightfold Noble Path. I've got the teaching of the Buddha. I know how to use it. hot dog. This is, in fact, the most important part, is when we eliminate those three levels of doubt. The doubt of, who can I get to help me? That's loneliness. I can do it myself is the second level of doubt. I can do this. And the third level of doubt is, I've got all that I need in order to do it. I've got the Eightfold and Noble Path. I've got it made. Once we have that, now we're fully on the path of the Sotapan. Because we know that the Eightfold and Noble Path is going to work. How do we know that? Is because now we can see the dukkha. We can see the mind's obstructed. Hot dog, I can see it. I also know why. Why is because I was wanting something. I was desiring desirelessness. I was lonely, wanting someone to fix me. In fact, I was stuck in one of those other two layers of doubt. And when we can see that was the cause of my suffering, we're no longer ignorant. Now we can actually take a rest. Wow, I have done what I needed to do. The job that needed to be done has been done. I'll have to do the job again. I'm not fully, completely out of it, but I know how to do it. And so we do this over and over and over again. So, the next point would be that issue of conceit. You could, in fact, say that conceit and competition is when we are lying to ourselves about being in this state of confidence, that it's a false confidence. It's the bully. That, in fact, it's kind of funny that the United States has gotten into the position that every local government wants to hire the town bully to be on the police force. They think that bullying people is the right way of enforcing the law. And in fact, all they're going to do is create the bully inside of the individual. And so you're having a bully fight over and over and over again. Now, what is the bully? The bully is the one who thinks that he can get his way with other people through violence of some sort. And guess what? You can't get your way with other people, whether you use violence or sweet talk or anything. People are going to do what they want to do. They're going to follow their desires. And we can't control other people. This is part of the reason why the teaching of the Buddha is not really proselytized. We don't go around selling it to other people, trying to get a reward in heaven because we got someone to convert. Then, in fact, it's really hard to get those people to do anything. There's an old joke about it. It's like teaching a pig to sing. Not only is it frustrating, but it annoys the pig. Just like the cop out there being a bully, he annoys people. People are frustrated and angry at the police because the police want to get their way. They call themselves peace officers, but they're all officers, no peace available, because they are using violence, thinking that they can force their way, just like each one of us think that we can force our way into being desirelessness. No, we're not going to do that. You can't force your way into it. A lot of people have tried, and in fact, the Buddha was very good at doing that. Before he had that point with the remembering the rose apple tree, he had gotten himself emaciated because he was following what is now the Jains. Now, the Jains have gone through an awful lot of evolutions and revolutions in the past 2,500 years. But you could say that, in fact, the Jains were the original Sangha. That Buddha and us Buddhists can't claim that the Buddha Sangha is the longest lasting and oldest. We can just say that it's almost the longest lasting. It's almost the oldest. and is certainly the largest. But the Jains that he was a member of, their idea was is that, oh, you have to get your behavior perfectly. You can't do anything wrong. You can't kill. That's why you'll see modern day Jain priests or monks sweeping the path in front of them to get rid of any bugs that they might step on. They also, long before COVID, 2,500 years before COVID, they would wear a face mask so that they wouldn't breathe in any animals, flying insects and whatnot like this. And so their behavior was perfect. This is something very interesting. Their behavior was perfect, and yet they still were suffering. And so their teacher, Naganagaputta, had some remarks about that. He says, oh, well, even though your behavior now is perfect, you still feel bad because of your old bad karma. That because of something that happened 100 years ago, you feel bad now, even though your behavior is perfect. Think about that. So what they said was, all right, well, I'm in a hurry to get rid of the dissatisfactions and suffering that I have now from the old past karma. Let me do something to burn it up. And so they would start to self-flagellate themselves. They would start putting themselves under pressure, starving themselves, and doing all sorts of things, thinking that it was burning up old, bad actions. And they fail to recognize you're not dispelling old, bad actions. You're creating new bad actions right here, right now, that you're suffering under right here, right now. So now you've got your habits of your mind followed by the fact that you're self-flagellating. You're working at it. You're pumping iron, or you're laying on a bed of nails, or you're hanging by a fish hook from a tree branch, or you're carrying a heavy burden, or you're whipping yourself with chains, whatever it is. Now, recognize that we do this mentally. Everybody does this mentally. This is what we mean by self-criticism, that we criticize ourselves, thinking that if we are critical of our desire, we can criticize our way out of wanting. And actually what we're doing instead is adding double to it. You cannot criticize your way out of it. The only way to come out of it is by nurturing your way out of it. That violence begets violence, that you don't solve violence with violence. You do it with loving kindness. You do it with nurturing. So you have to learn to nurture yourself. And that's what I mean by that statement of, aha, I see you, Myra. That's a nurturing thought. Rather than, damn it, you shouldn't be desiring all of that stuff. You should not be wanting to be not lonely. Rather than saying, oh, I see that loneliness. It's okay. I'll be all right. I can come out of it. So this is the real way of the teaching of the Buddha, that we cannot, in fact, criticize our way out of any bad behavior and the results of that bad behavior, mentally or otherwise. The only way that we can come out of it is joyfully, happily, being able to say, I see that. The statement then would be to love yourself, warts and all. And in fact, in this knowledge base that I was talking about for the Sotapan, one of them is to happily see our own warts, to see our wrongdoing, to see what we have done wrong, happily. Because if we can see it, then we can do something about it. We can really investigate it. We can see what's going on immediately, and then we can come out of it. But what we do instead is look at it again, stay in it, criticize ourselves, you shouldn't do this, all of that kind of criticism, and keeps us stuck in that criticism. It's a vicious cycle. It's sort of like the two bullies inside, the mama bully and the baby bully. Those two are at odds with each other. It's what we should do versus what we want to do. And when we can see that duality within our mind, we can come back to the reality of everything's okay. The mother inside or the parent inside begins to nurture the child rather than criticize the child. And then you feel that you're okay rather than being criticized. So when you have feelings of loneliness, that loneliness means that the mother inside of us, the parent inside of us, is critical. If she were nurturing, if you would nurture yourself, you wouldn't need someone else to nurture you. And when you're out there looking for someone to nurture you, the girlfriend or whatever, yeah, she'll do a little of nurturing, but she's going to do a whole lot of criticizing. She's actually going to become your mommy. And she's going to start criticizing you. The same thing happens in reverse, that the daddy nurtures his daughter and he criticizes her too. Let's come out of that duality and come into just nurturing ourselves. Everything is okay. If you begin to feel like you're the winner, if you can feel like whatever happens, you can come out of it and be okay, then we don't have to go around proving ourselves to others. Like the cop, for instance, he's a bully. He's trying to prove that he's okay, where in fact he's actually proving that he's, you know, he's about to get fired from his job because he's being a bully. It's hard for people to see that when they're stuck in being bullies. And we bully ourselves. We criticize ourselves. And so we can come out of that bullying, come out of that criticism, and come into a state of nurturing so that you can be friends with yourself. You don't have to compete with yourself. You don't have to compete with other people in order to feel good. In other words, be the winner on the inside, not on the outside. On the outside, let the world win. It's okay. I'm strong enough to allow the world to win. Okay? Here's an example of what I'm talking about. If an old grandmaster is going to teach a child to play chess, he has to let the child win. If that child learning how to play chess is going to lose every game to the grandmaster, she will get frustrated, uptight, upset, begin to hate chess, and stop playing. So if you're going to play chess with the world, you have to let the world win. You have to be strong enough. You have to be a grandmaster enough to let the world win. That's real strength. Real strength inside is not winning all the time. That's competition and wanting to win. We desire to win. We need to win. We have to win because otherwise we feel like a loser inside. But if we, in fact, feel like a winner inside, then we can continue to feel like that winner inside and let the world have their way. Yes, Ivan, you got a question.
No, I just realized that there's a lot of time unconsciously, like, let's say I'm not feeling joyful, it's all subconscious when whether it's a game or sport or anything, there's this desire to win. Because it's like, if I win, then I will feel better. Mm-hmm. But if I'm not in this state of suffering or sadness or dissatisfaction, when I'm doing something, there's no thought of wanting to win or not. It's just doing. And from there, I just enjoy it. I just caught myself. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So that's a kind of an interesting way of asking the question. Is being a sore winner better than being a happy loser? being a happy loser, happy because the loss of the competition was irrelevant. I'm still okay inside. But the angry winner is that he wins, but he still doesn't feel good. He could become the champion of the world in whatever sport or whatever game he wants to play, and he's still going to be unhappy and miserable. Being good at something is only useful if you're good at the right thing. And what we're practicing here is the skill of feeling good. Can you develop the skill of feeling good? Being in control of your feelings. Learn to feel the way you want to feel rather than feeling the way that you've developed as a habit. This is the whole point, is that we can, in fact, change our mind. We can change our attitude. We can become that champion. We know that no matter how obstructed the mind gets, we can clean that out. We can come back to a state of everything is okay. Everything is fine. We can see reality as it is. And look around you. Everything around you is okay. Everything is just fine. Why is it that we keep complaining about the way things are? It's because we've been taught. We've been taught that everything needs fixing, where in fact everything is fine. Everything is okay. Not a problem in the world. Everything is fine. Can we remember that? Can we come back and say, aha, I see all of that stuff, and I'm okay. I'm just fine. I'm not afraid. I feel safe and secure. I'm not uncomfortable. I feel comfort. And then I can feel satisfaction. And remember that this is all the Buddha taught. Was dukkha, dukkha, nirodha. See your own dissatisfactions and come out of it and be satisfied. Be happy. Be joyful. We have to practice doing this because look how much practice we put in feeling bad. Literally, you have talked yourself into feeling bad for your whole life. Now it's time to talk yourself into feeling good. Convince yourself that everything is okay. Everything is fine. Does anybody have any questions or statements? No. Everything's all right. Everything is fine. Excellent. David, what do you think?
I think everything's fine. Everything's all right. Got no worries, no problems.
How about you, Ivan? Are you really happy-go-lucky now?
I try to be. I was just thinking about this wake up and seeing Mara as this awareness that transcends all the conditioned thinking that I have. It's not about one thing, anything. It's transcending all those desires, the desire to be desired, just seeing. I'm trying to keep remembering that. Yeah.
How about you, Anna? Do you have anything to say? You're hunky-dory, huh? Everything is all right. How about you, Damodas? You have anything to say?
No, just thank you.
May you all be well and happy. May you all say, aha, I see that stuff. I am so happy I can see it, because you're already changing once you say that. Aha, I can see that. Allow yourself, I can see this stuff. I can see it. No matter how obstructed the mind gets, I can see that stuff and come out of it. Loneliness, competition, desiring desirelessness, all of that stuff. Hot dog, I can see it. And then I can, already am changing it. So, thank you guys. I really appreciate it. This has been a nice talk. A lot of fun here. We'll see ya.
Thank you so much, camarado.